defending liberty 1 hour at a time, and broadcasting from the RWB Network Studios in New York, you're listening to The Rhino Report. Always right.
Let's get ready to rumble!
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
She got chunked. You are very rude.
If you want to turn yourselves into a greasy spot on a country road somewhere, go right ahead.
And now, here's your host, The Rhino.
Hello, hello, hello. I am The Rhino, and this is my report today, March 9th, 2016. Unless, of course, you're listening on Red State Talk Radio Studio B, which I hope you are. In that case, it's about 1 a.m. on March 10th. As always, just a little ahead of my time. Today's show, all right? We have a lot to do. It's going to be a speed show. A speed show with three victories last night. Is there anything left in the establishment's arsenal to try and derail Donald Trump? Also, just how effective was Mitt Romney's speech? Plus, is Iran thinking about backing out of the nuclear deal? And college crybabies submit more lists of demands, this time in Washington and Arizona. If you thought you've heard everything, wait till you hear what this group of all-inclusive idiots now want. All that, plus polls, we have stuff from Loretta Lynch, and we're going to talk about maybe something I've been saying for a couple of months now might be coming to fruition, and it has to do with North Korea, Iran, and Barack Obama. But first, before we get to all of that, we need to salute our country with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. As always, the Pledge of Allegiance brought to you here on the Rhino Report by the kids. Send me a submission of your son or daughter or their class, maybe Cub Scout troop, Girl Scout troop, whatever, saying the Pledge of Allegiance, and we'll get them on air. Just the name of the group or your child, the hometown, state, whatever, and we'll give them a shout-out, and they can hear themselves on air broadcasting to thousands and thousands of people. So, as you guys know, you can always catch the Rhino Report. Go over, you know, subscribe to it. You can subscribe on Stitcher or Podbean or TuneIn and iTunes and Spreaker. We're all over the place. You can't miss us. You can't miss us. Our social media presence is growing every day. Our listeners are growing every day. And today is actually the 52nd episode. So we've done all of this in just a matter of a couple of months. So it's really been pretty special. All right, moving on. It sounds like Obama's going to skip Nancy Reagan's funeral. Now, this is nothing too new. He skipped Scalia's funeral as well. They're saying that they had plans well in advance, so maybe he wasn't invited. Maybe Nancy Reagan didn't want him there. However, Michelle Obama's going. So that just says to me that Obama just didn't want to go. Barack just didn't want to go. Instead, he will be attending the South by Southwest Music and Arts Festival in Texas. So instead of going to Scalia's funeral, he met with the Black Lives Matter, and now instead of attending Nancy Reagan's funeral, he's going to a music and arts festival. Listen, nothing surprises me with this man anymore. There is just, he doesn't have compassion for anyone that's not like him, and especially, there is especially no compassion for someone who's conservative or Republican or just doesn't fit that Alinsky model. We should not be surprised by this, but they are laying Nancy Reagan to rest on Friday, and it's an invite-only thing. She was laid out, so you could go and pay your last respects, but the funeral is invite-only. I just wanted to get that out of the way before we got too far into what we need to talk about today, to show you the kind of character we are dealing with in the White House. But you guys already know that. I don't need to tell you the kind of person he is. You guys already know it. Which is why you're listening, which is why you're going out and you're voting, and which is why, come November, we must win this election. All right, so last night you had Michigan, and you had Mississippi, and you had Hawaii and Idaho. So Donald Trump comes away with three of the four. Not too bad. I think everybody would have assumed that Ted Cruz was going to win Idaho. I thought he'd have a little better showing in Mississippi than he did. He did come away with some delegates, which is not altogether bad for Ted Cruz. Let's see, he finished in Mississippi with 36% to Trump's 47%. Kasich beat Rubio in Mississippi. Now, this is concerning, right? If you're Rubio, this is perhaps more concerning than the possibility of not winning Florida, because you have Hillary Clinton got 82% of the vote in Mississippi. So if your stance as part of the Rubio campaign is going to be, well, we're the best candidate to take on Hillary Clinton, you only got 5% of the vote in a state where she dominated. She dominated Mississippi. This is one of her biggest wins yet. Bernie had 16%. We'll talk about him in a minute. But Trump comes away 24 delegates out of Mississippi. Cruz gets 13. Kasich, goose egg. Rubio, goose egg. Rubio didn't get one delegate all night. He's stuck on the 151. But listen, going back to Rubio again, he keeps saying that he is the best candidate to take on Hillary and that the Democrats are scared of Rubio. Now, that's not what Debbie Wasserman Schmuck sounded like last night. We'll get to that clip in a second. But here's Rubio. He can't compete in any of the southern states. Donald Trump is wiping the floor with little Marco Rubio all over the South. And the South was supposed to be this firewall for Ted Cruz. Now, Ted Cruz is eking out some wins where you wouldn't expect him. Nobody expected Ted Cruz to win Maine. If I were a betting man, I would have put my money on Trump to win Maine. He was the only candidate to go there. I mean, even if it was only for about an hour and a half, he was still there. Nobody else was there. Plus, he killed it in New Hampshire. He killed it in Vermont. All right? I never would have expected Ted Cruz to win there, which is good. Which is good, because that means some of these rural states may have this uprising of conservatism in these states. I know from talking with Jim Lysat of Red Nation Rising, he has always said that the biggest influence his group needs to have is not in Kansas, it's not in Oklahoma, it's not in Texas. He needs Red Nation Rising to have an influence in Massachusetts, in New York, in Maine, in Vermont, in New Hampshire, in these eastern states and these Midwest states that may be like Michigan, okay? Illinois. These states that are pretty blue, but could always go red with the right amount of influence. So, you know, Red Nation Rising has a strong support base across the South, but they like their influence, they like to expand their influence in the northern states and in the typical blue states, and that's not an altogether bad approach to it. You know you're always going to have support in some states. It's the other ones. And that's what Donald Trump is starting to bring to the table. He may make states like New York and New Jersey go red. And now, Cruz, with a pretty surprising victory in Maine, who knows? Who knows? Maine could always go red, too. It's very possible. It's very possible. But Rubio, I don't know, guys. Trump has now called for Rubio to drop out. Now, every 5 minutes, somebody's calling for somebody else to drop out. If you remember last week, after Super Tuesday, John Kasich's campaign said, oh, Rubio should drop out. Well, that's like the guy in fourth place at the time telling the guy in second place to drop out. That was a little crazy. But really, if the establishment, or not even establishment, if you want a strong, strong conservative, a constitutional conservative, to win the primary, it's gonna have to be Ted Cruz, right? Each candidate is saying it's time to coalesce. It's time to coalesce and stand behind me. That's what everybody's saying. Trump says stand behind me. Cruz says stand behind me. Rubio holds fourth place victory speeches and says stand behind me. Well, I don't know, guys. I think Rubio's gonna have to drop out and support Cruz. That's the only way this happens. And a week ago, you would have said Cruz has to drop out to support Rubio. But Rubio has done terribly. You can't be a contender for the President of the United States of America and get 5% of the vote in any state. Any state. You can't look to Puerto Rico as being your bastion of support. You just can't. They're a territory. All right? They've voted down being a state many times. Now, of course, they want statehood protection against bankruptcy. Right? Now they want to be protected by us. But I really think at this point in time, it is time for Rubio to call it quits. Florida, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The polls, we'll get to those in a few minutes. They don't look good for Rubio. There was one ARG poll a couple of days ago that showed him within 3 or 4 points of Trump. That has been washed away by 3 or 4 other much more reputable polls that showed Trump with a much, much bigger lead. I get the Trump surge. I totally get it. I'm yet to give you guys who I would endorse or who I will endorse. And I'll do this. I will give you my endorsement on Monday, okay? The day before you have Florida and Ohio and a couple others go to vote. I'll give you my endorsement Monday, okay? I'm between the two. You guys are all between also, which is weird because there's so much hatred between Trump supporters and Cruz supporters, yet they are each one's second choice. There are no Cruz supporters that say, well, John Kasich's my second choice. And there are no Trump supporters that say, well, Marco Rubio's my second choice. It's very weird, which means I think they can come together. Everybody keeps saying how split and how divided. Yeah, but yeah, if you think about it, Trump and Cruz are really on the same side. Now, I know they're miles apart on policy in some areas. But when it comes to being an outsider, when it comes to not being part of that Washington cartel, as Cruz calls it, or the Washington establishment, as Trump calls it, these guys are natural allies, right? They're natural allies. So I'm between those two. I'll give you on Monday who my pick is, who I'm going to throw my endorsement to. Listen, 100% honesty, my guy, who I had originally wanted to win, is no longer in the race. So, I have to now pick between the two frontrunners, which is what we all really have to do. Now, you have Mitt Romney saying in Florida, you know, vote for Rubio, and in Ohio, vote for Kasich. Well, that obviously is Mitt Romney looking for a brokered convention. That's what he's looking for. The day he made that speech where he railed against Donald Trump, he also said he didn't want to be the nominee. And then 2 days later, he said on TV, well, yeah, I would take it. If it came down to it and the convention went brokered, I would take it. So you can't trust a word that comes out of Mitt Romney's mouth. But that notwithstanding, I do believe Rubio needs to call it quits. Even if he gets the 99 votes, even if he gets the 99 votes that Florida has in a winner-take-all format, he's still going to be light years behind even Ted Cruz. At this point in time, you have Donald Trump with 458 delegates, Ted Cruz with 359, Rubio with 151, and Kasich with 54. John Kasich is closer to Marco Rubio than Marco Rubio is to Cruz. Let that sink in for a second. And this is the guy who thinks he can take on Hillary, where he gets 5% of the vote in a state where she got 80% of the vote. He would do worse than Bernie Sanders. Let that sink in for a second. So I do believe this is down to two. I've always kind of thought it was down to two. Truth be told, back in September, I thought we'd be here in March talking about Trump and Carson. That's where I thought we'd be, 5 or 6 months down the road. But it's Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz has run a very kind of slow freight train, you know, chugging along style campaign. Yeah, there have been some bumps in the road. All right, we had the issue with Iowa, with those voter cards that he was sending out. And then now there was some reports out of Hawaii yesterday that he was running some ads that said Marco Rubio is being told to drop out by his donors. Yeah, there are a few unsavory things that Ted Cruz and his campaign have done. There was that video with Rubio and the Bible where his campaign manager, Cruz's campaign manager, wound up resigning over it. But listen, all is fair in love, war, and politics, right? That's my thought on it. Now, whether I support Trump or I support Cruz personally, it doesn't mean I don't like the other one. right? Each one has good things about them, very good things about them. And I do believe, well, I believe one of them has a better chance of beating Hillary than the other. My mind could change. It definitely could. It has changed back and forth a few times already. But at this point, that's the concern, is beating Hillary. Now, if something happens with Hillary in the next couple of weeks or months, then the plan changes. It totally changes. But for now, you have to focus on where the goal line is, right? And right now, the goal line is getting past Hillary in November. So, all right, so rounding out last night, you had Bernie with a big upset in Michigan. You know what? That's not too hard to fathom. He was down pretty far in the polls beforehand. But listen, Bernie's message resonates with that type of population, and that's really all I'll say about it, which is, to me, a little weird why it doesn't resonate better in the South. But listen, it is what it is. People know Bernie is a socialist, and he's making a play for that VP nod. There's nobody else Clinton can really get. There really isn't. And let's be honest, if Bernie has a big day on Tuesday, next Tuesday, it's a game changer for the Democrats. Total game changer. Right now, Clinton has the lead with 1,221 delegates, okay? And Sanders has 571. Now, you need 2,383 on the Democratic side. So she's about halfway there. But if you look at the raw delegates, you know, just the regular delegates, not super delegates, it's 760 to 546. It's much, much closer than people would have you believe. Then you tack on 461 super delegates to Hillary and only 25 to Bernie, and that's where the numbers start getting more of a disparity between the two. The Democrats are very big on not letting their voters choose a candidate. They're very big on it. Now, I know we're going to have our own set of problems in July with the convention. You know, we all know the Rules Committee has to meet. They have to meet a week before the convention, and they're going to come up with new rules. They're going to take those rules, give them to the RNC, and the RNC is going to take which ones they like out of that batch and give it to the convention committee, and then eventually they'll be able to order lunch. That's kind of how this goes. But if it sounds confusing, that's because it's supposed to be. They may very well say at the convention in July that no one's bound to a first ballot. Now, don't be shocked if that happens. If Donald Trump gets the 1237 he needs before, you know, or if even by June 7th, by California and New Jersey, North and South Dakota, if he gets the 1237 he needs, maybe you have to give him a couple more because there are some at-large, but I would not be shocked if you saw nobody bound to a first ballot. Now, there would be total anarchy in the party. That would definitely send Trump into a third party and thus handing the Democrats the election. I've gone over many times why the Republicans want that. They would rather Hillary win or the Democrat win rather than Trump, because Trump won't play ball with the special interest and lobbyists. But if Hillary or Bernie or Biden are the president, they being the Republicans, have the House and the Senate, and they can just play defense for four more years and put up somebody else, probably Rubio again, 4 years from now. Although it sounds like Rubio wants to run for governor of Florida now. That's what I'm hearing. But, all right. What else do we have to talk about here? We have to talk about an endorsement. Somebody got an endorsement from Carly Fiorina, and that somebody is Ted Cruz. She says here, Ted Cruz is a fearless fighter for our constitutional rights. He has spent his life protecting Americans' God-given liberties, and he has always stood by his word. Unlike the status quo political class in D.C., Ted Cruz didn't cower when he got to Washington. He stood unequivocally for the American people. I know Ted, and he'll do the same as president. So that's from Carly Fiorina. This is no real big surprise. I didn't think she would back Trump. I don't think her and Trump necessarily get along, although you would have thought that she would have, being the other outsider. But maybe this helps. Maybe Fiorina backing Cruz has the same impact as Christie backing Trump. That's very possible. All right. Let's see. All right. Talking about Romney. made this speech, whatever it was, a couple days ago, whatever it was, and really thinks he's going to go after Donald Trump. He's going to talk about Trump steaks. He's going to talk about Trump mortgage, Trump University, Trump water, Trump this, Trump that. All while, mind you, one of Mitt Romney's companies, Sports Authority, is filing Chapter 11. So just be aware of that. They did a poll. This was done by the Morning Consult. They did a poll asking how much influence did Romney's speech have on your vote, okay? Or how much does it have on your vote? Now, 30% of people who voted for Romney in 2012 are still going to vote for Trump, even after the speech. 20% said they won't vote for Trump. 20% of people who voted for Romney in 2012 will not vote for Trump. But 48%, this is the big number, 48% of people voted for Romney in 2012 says his speech had no impact on him. So here's, that means he was the candidate by default. That's what that number means. It means that his poll only goes as far as, well, he was the candidate because nobody else really shined through. You had Santorum and Gingrich, okay? Those would have been the other two guys. So 48% of people don't give a crap about what Mitt Romney says. So, but yet he thinks that his word is gospel. Mitt Romney, make no mistake, is playing for a brokered convention. That's what he's playing for, or some wacky rule by the Rules Committee. That's what Mitt Romney's playing for. I don't think he'll insert himself. He is, however, I think, eligible to be on the ballot in a few of the late states. I think they have registered with the FEC to be on the ballot. But he's looking for the brokered convention, yet he doesn't have any pull with the general electorate. But such is the Republican establishment. They always think what they say is gospel, and at the end of the day, it's not. We're tired of hearing it. We're tired of hearing it, and we're tired of hearing about Mitt Romney. At least I am, anyway. All right, so Trump wins. He comes out about 9 o'clock last night. He had already won two states. He was not going to win Hawaii until, what was it, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. But he had already won Mississippi and Michigan. He comes out. Now, Trump isn't doing these rallies anymore. He's doing more of these press conferences. And he sets himself up very nice. If you look at the chairs that are in the room, they look very much like the chairs in the East Room of the White House. He has the flags behind him. He stands up there. You know, he's by himself. The first one he had Chris Christie at didn't look so hot optics-wise, but... And he does a little speech. And last night was hysterical. It was like an episode of QVC. He said, oh, we have Trump steaks here. We have Trump water here. I sold Trump Airlines, Trump Magazine. He had all the things that Romney had accused Trump of bankrupting. He had them all there saying how well the companies were actually doing. Listen, Trump responded, and that was a good response. He's telling me I'm bankrupting these companies. Meanwhile, here they are. They're all served in my hotels. They're served in my properties. And that's that. So it makes Romney look a little stupid. So Trump does these little speeches. And he sounded like he wanted to make amends with the establishment. He said he spoke to Paul Ryan. He seems like a nice guy. And that he said it's been a pretty good race so far. He only made one remark towards Little Marco and Lion Ted. He didn't go off on it like he usually does. So he does his little speech, and then he takes questions from the press. Now, he doesn't like the press. Donald Trump always points to the back of the room and says, there they are. They're all liars. They're all this. They're all that. So he's taking questions, and there was a question regarding Trump's language. Now, there's an ad running in Florida, a Rubio ad, saying how vulgar Trump is. So there's a reporter from NBC. I forget the guy's name. It's out there if you want to find it. But he asked a question. He says, how do you explain some of the language? Now, Donald Trump pretty much eviscerates this guy. He says, oh, you're so politically correct. You're so beautiful. Look at you. Oh, he's so, I know. You've never heard a little bad, a little off language. I know you're a perfect. Aren't you perfect? Aren't you just a perfect young man? Give me a break. You know what? It's stuff like that that people in this country are tired of, okay? It's stuff like that. And the guy sits down. He has to sit down because Trump took care of him. The language. We can't say things anymore, right? That's part of this whole campaign is Trump likes to say what he wants. And people can use the whole, oh, he says what I'm thinking thing. That's not really it. That's very superficial. That's not really it. People are just tired of the PC. They're tired of the PC. And you know what? We're going to get into more of the PC a little bit later in the show when we talk about these lists of demands that these crybaby college kids have now at two more universities out west. So talk about PC. We'll get to that. But this press conference, it went over well. Carl Cameron on Fox tried to hammer Trump a little bit. You know, Trump never really gets that rattled. He's only been rattled like twice, right? Once in South Carolina with Jeb Bush, and then once in, I think it was, New Hampshire with Marco Rubio. I forget which one that one was. There's been so many debates, right? And now there's one tomorrow night, too. You have the debate in Miami. Now, this debate in Miami, just to go off on a tangent for half a second here, is going to be loaded with Rubio supporters. And that's because, not because it's in Miami, but because the RNC, again, is going to be filling the seats. Each candidate has 10 or 20 tickets, so that leaves, what, 80 or 100 seats taken up by candidates, and then there's another 900 seats to fill. So, in the debate in Texas, I would have thought that Ted Cruz would have had the large amount of support there, being a Texas senator. No, Rubio had the crowd there. And now you go into Miami, he'll have the crowd in Miami too. That's going to be on CNN. I think this will probably be the last debate. There were grumblings that we're going to cancel it, but I guess they're going to have it. And, you're going to hear a lot of cheers from Marco Rubio. You're going to hear a lot of boos for Ted Cruz and a lot of boos for Donald Trump. That's just the way this is going. People will be pretty happy to hear from John Kasich. He always has some cheers when people aren't confused. So, all right. So going back to last night, after this press conference, they had Debbie Wasserman Schmutz was on Megyn Kelly and Brett Baier. And she was on essentially having to defend the fact that Hillary lost Michigan. This was a huge loss for Hillary. She was up by 10, 15 points in every single poll. Some polls showed Hillary in Michigan up over 20 points just a day before the primary. And, she has to come on, and she almost has to defend what's going on. So then, you know, Megyn gets into saying, well, listen, you can call Republicans vulgar all you want, because she starts talking about Donald Trump and his vulgarity, and we just talked about how NBC tried to get Donald Trump on vulgarity too. So now Megyn Kelly, listen, give credit where credit's due. She stood up for Donald Trump, and she said, well, you know, the Republicans may be vulgar, but you have issues of your own. Now here, take a listen to this exchange between Megyn Kelly and Debbie Wasserman Schmutz.
You know what the response to that on the other side is, which is, yes, it's gotten a little vulgar on the GOP side, but no one's facing the threat of indictment.
There's no one facing the threat of indictment on our side either, Megyn.
There's an open DOJ and FBI focused investigation into Mrs. Clinton right now.
Right. Let's not be melodramatic.
How is that melodramatic? Those are the facts.
Well, predicting that there's someone who is facing indictment is definitely
there was no prediction. There was a statement that there's no one on the GOP side who's under threat of indictment. That's what the Republicans say on this.
No. Instead, you have the Republican Party, who is being led right now by their front runner, who has a multi-bankrupted, you know, absolutely outrageous, ridiculous position.
Now, if you listen very, very carefully, you have to turn the audio up. You can actually hear the wind blowing through Wasserman Schultz's ears. There's nothing between her ears. There's nothing there. It's dead. It's hollow space. It's a conch shell. Whatever you want to call it, there's nothing there. Because there is obviously, and we've been told, an official investigation into Mrs. Clinton, and they just deny it. It's this, they've been denying this from day one. Even Hillary Clinton herself says, well, there's no investigation, there's no investigation. Like, who's lying? Is Hillary Clinton lying, or is the FBI lying? Well, I know who I'm more inclined to believe. And then Wasserman Schmutz here, what she does is she changes the attack. So Megyn Kelly says, so what's up? You know, here you have, you're making attacks on the Republicans, yet they're going to say none of them are facing an indictment. And she says, well, Donald Trump has failed many businesses, and he's a circus act. Like, this is what they do. Whenever things aren't going their way, they always turn to the ad hominem attack. Now, if you're a Cruz fan, a Rubio fan, or a Kasich fan, you still have to be annoyed by that. It's not just because you can laugh because it's Donald Trump. It doesn't matter. You still have to be annoyed by that. But this exchange is making its rounds on all sorts of media outlets today because Wasserman Schultz, she just sounds like a bumbling idiot. She sounds like an idiot. Now, a lot of people in her party want her gone, which, let's be honest, none of these problems with Hillary Clinton, none of them really have to do with her at all, with Wasserman Schultz. The problem is she was so vehemently protecting Hillary with these debates at like 3 o'clock in the morning in Saskatoon and, you know, not wanting to acquiesce to the Sanders campaign and then stripping their information from the Sanders campaign for a little while. This was so obviously, you know, in an attempt to have Hillary be the nominee. So there are people in her party that want her out. And I tend to think no matter how this goes in November, she will be out. But really, just turn the volume up and you can hear the wind sailing right through her ears. But hey, listen, people follow them like lemmings. The Democrats follow her and they follow Hillary like lemmings, and they're going to follow them off the cliff. That's what's going to happen. There's very little doubt about that. So, all right, we're going to save the rest for when we come back. We're going to talk a little bit here about, let's talk about what's going on at an island off the coast of Georgia. Is there some plotting and scheming going on? Also, Iran fires 2 ballistic missiles, one with a warning to Israel on them. Also, you have North Korea says they have made a nuclear warhead able to go onto an ICBM. And what's up with these crybaby college kids across the western part of the United States? During the break, give me a follow on Twitter, at Rhino on Air. That's at Rhino, R-Y-N-O, on Air. Or shoot me an email, rhinoonair@gmail.com. Remember, you can always find the Rhino Report on TuneIn and Podbean and Spreaker and iTunes and Stitcher. You can subscribe to it. You can also find the Rhino Report on the rwbnetwork.com website. We're also there. We're everywhere. So stay right where you are. We'll be back in about 90 seconds.
You are listening to the Rhino Report.
She got chunked.
Always right. Now streaming on Red State Talk Radio.
You are very rude.
Hey guys, your friend and your host, The Rhino, here. There are 3 ways you can get involved with The Rhino Report and the RWB Network. Here they are. Listen up. Number 1, you can be a writer for one of the fastest-growing grassroots conservative media outlets out there. Send me a submission, and I'll read it, and we'll get you published on the RWB Network website. We see hundreds and hundreds of unique hits every single day. Number 2, if you want to hear The Rhino Report in your local area, all you have to do is go to your local radio station's website and find the program director's email address. They're always pretty prominent there. Send them an email, say you want to hear the Rhino Report on your local AM or FM station, and I guarantee you, if just one person emails the program director, they will find me and will be on your airwaves. The 3rd way to get involved with the RWB Network and the Rhino Report and actually make a little bit of money is if you have a little bit of sales experience or even none at all, shoot me an email. We're looking for people who want to sell some advertising space. The show is growing and so can your bank account. So those are 3 ways to get involved with the RWB Network and the Rhino Report. I'll see you back in about 20 seconds.
Talk radio the way the founding fathers would have done it.
I'm just a man trying to make his mark on history.
Red State Talk Radio.
This is Jeff Carlisi from the band 38 Special. Let us never forget that police lives matter.
All right, welcome back to the Rhino Report. I am your host and your friend, the Rhino. So, during the break, I was thinking about which stories we really need to focus on because, you know, time runs short sometimes. We only have 55 minutes here, and we need to get to the most important stories. Now, this is a story, this is coming from the Huffington Post and Breitbart and several other places that there have been reports that the American Enterprise Institute, which is a conservative-leaning think tank, is holding a private conference, which they've done for a lot of years, but they're holding a private conference off the coast of Georgia, where now 54 private jets have been seen flying into. And the topic of this conference is to figure out a way to stop Donald Trump. Now, all right, this is not new. They've been trying to figure out how to stop Trump for months now. But now they're starting to involve some people out of Silicon Valley. Some of the attendees to this conference are Tim Cook from Apple, Google co-founder Larry Page, Napster and Facebook guy Sean Parker, and then you have Elon Musk, of course, from Tesla Motors and SpaceX. Who else was there? Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Karl Rove, Paul Ryan, Tom Cotton, Cory Gardner, Tim Scott, Rob Portman, Ben Sasse, and, you know, among many others. Many others. You have people from the House. You have Kevin Brady. Then you have Kevin McCarthy, all right? So there are a lot of people getting together to try to figure out, with some of the best minds out of Silicon Valley, how to stop Donald Trump. Now, this is just another case of we know better than you, right? That's the Democrat mantra. It always has been. We know better. Let us handle it. You guys will see we're right in the end. Well, that's kind of what the establishment in the GOP, and now along with some of these Silicon Valley CEOs and, you know, honchos are doing, is they're saying, listen, the people want Donald Trump, but we don't. Now, you should take heed to that, because if they don't want somebody, it means they're probably good for the people, all right? Now, I've said for a long time, the way this all goes away, the way you get rid of the Washington cartel, as Ted Cruz calls it, or the establishment, is you put term limits in place. If you have term limits in place, then candidates like Donald Trump are commonplace. They're people who are Washington outsiders. They're people who want to become a civil servant after having a career somewhere else, because now they want to serve their community. Maybe they've made their money, maybe they've started a business, for whatever reason. If you look back to our original representatives, what were they? They were lawyers and doctors and landowners, right? Cobblers, everything. They're people who were parts of their community who then decided to go represent their community in Washington. Now who do you have? You have political career politicians that their only job is to get reelected. Right? That's their only job. These people come into Washington with sometimes very meager salaries from what they were doing, and they come out millionaires. Look at Harry Reid. Harry Reid's a perfect example. Here's somebody who came in with a very meager beginning and then winds up making a ton of money because of legislation he helps push through in Washington. So maybe these people getting together to try to figure out how to stop Donald Trump is maybe them trying to figure out how to stop the American people. The people that created the government, the American government, for, of, and by the people. They forgot that. They forgot that they work for us, not the other way around. Okay? But they're getting together. They're going to try to figure out how to stop Trump, and I got news for you, it's not going to work, because if this thing goes brokered for any other reason other than the fact that Trump does not have the delegates, it's going to be total mayhem. It's going to be mayhem. I know Bloomberg has said he's not going to run, but if Trump or anybody else, if Trump wins and the GOP puts up a third party, or if the GOP nominates somebody and Trump comes up third party, you can see Bloomberg will get in. Somebody will get in on that side because they'll see a severe weakness in Hillary Clinton, one that the Republicans haven't been able to really tap yet because they've been so busy going after each other. And this is at the direction of the RNC. The RNC is directing guys like Marco Rubio to go after Trump. That's what they're doing. And even Fox was playing into it in their last debate. If you remember, they tried to bait in John Kasich with a question, and Kasich said, well, I'm not biting. I want to talk about the issues. So even Fox is in on this too. Well, don't think Rupert Murdoch for a second isn't one of these guys in the Boys Club. Of course he is. So we'll see how this goes. This is a secret meeting that the AEI holds. No one really knows what they talk about, but I think we can all figure out what's going on here. What's going on here? But we are in for a couple of rough months. Especially if you see Trump get the 1237 he needs. You're going to start to see a lot of finagling and gerrymandering with the delegates because the GOP does not want Trump as the nominee. Meanwhile, most of the population at this point does. They do. All right, let's go overseas for a little while before we come back to America. Iran yesterday shot off two long-range missiles, and on them they wrote in Hebrew, "Israel must be wiped out," and Iran saying, well, it's okay. We're just letting Israel know that we can shoot a missile 860 miles or whatever it was, and that's just about as far as we need to go to hit Israel. But they shot him off the coast. They landed in the Sea of Oman. But listen, this is just the most recent act of aggression from Iran. All right, we know in October they ran some surface-to-surface missile testing, and then they've also fired rockets near U.S. warships. They had an unarmed drone go over some aircraft carriers. Of course, let's not forget, in January they captured 10 of our sailors and essentially held them hostage for 16 hours before parading them on national TV, state media, the FARS network, with them in the surrender position. But here's the most concerning thing. Is the White House doesn't see any of this as a violation to the nuclear agreement. They don't. The Iranians can test missiles until their heart's content. Josh Earnest even said it yesterday during the daily briefing that the United Nations is looking in to see if there's any other sanctions they may have violated, but for the most part, nothing they're doing is in violation of the agreement, which to me seems a little odd, because the nuclear agreement isn't to stop them from having nuclear power to power their homes, it's to stop them from putting a warhead on a missile and sending it over to either the United States or Israel, and that's why the agreement is in place. Now, they can do all of the nuclear spinning underground, but they need to test the rockets to see if they can fire long range or short range, and they put weights on the end of them to make sure they can handle the weight of a miniaturized nuclear warhead. That is the bulk of the problem. Just having the nuclear device isn't enough. All right, because you'd never get a plane close enough to Israeli airspace without them intercepting it to drop something. So it all centers around the rocket launches and around these ballistic missiles. That's the real problem, and the White House doesn't see a problem with it. That's the most concerning part. Now, what's also a little concerning is now Iran is saying they themselves may back out of this deal. They're the ones that may back out of the nuclear deal that we all agreed upon, apparently. Well, here's what I say to that. Well, why wouldn't they? They got $150 billion. They've locked up billions of dollars in contracts with European countries. So what do they need it for? Well, you know, once again, Barack Obama and his big band of merry idiots get outsmarted by somebody else. So when Donald Trump says our leaders are idiots, maybe he's not totally wrong. Who didn't see this coming? They got all this money. They've locked up more contracts, making snapback sanctions now almost virtually impossible because of their dealings with the EU now. And now they want to back out of the agreement and say, well, eh, F you, we'll just do this ourselves. Who didn't see this coming? Who is the idiot that didn't see this coming? We all saw it. I knew this was going to happen. The minute they got that money, I knew they were going to back out. Because there's nothing we can do to get that money back. We can place sanctions on them, which hurts them financially, causes them to spend that money. But at the end of the day, we'll never get that money back. We'll never see it back. And the money they got, they didn't even spend it on United States items. They spent it everywhere else. They didn't spend the money here. It didn't help our economy. So whenever Josh Earnest and the White House say money we send to Iran benefits the American taxpayer because the money comes back, they're 100% lying to you. We heard about that after the 10 sailors were released from Iran. Just, I mean, minutes after they received, what was it, $7 or $8 billion. Like, that wasn't a ransom, right? Like, they think we're so stupid we don't understand that that was actually a ransom paid. And they said, oh, no, it's good for the American taxpayer because they'll use that money to buy American items. They don't buy American things. They just don't. They don't want anything to do with us. And they want even less to do with Israel. So maybe the enemy isn't always overseas. Maybe the enemy is at the gates here, and they're the ones that should have seen this coming a mile away. And it was their lack of due diligence to see this happening just literally months into the future. Everybody thought, oh, 10 years from now, they'll have a weapon. Well, these people didn't say, well, 7 months from now, they're going to have our money and then just flip off the agreement. Now, North Korea is now also claiming that they have miniaturized a nuclear warhead and they can put it on a missile. There was pictures yesterday coming out of North Korea with Kim Jong-un standing next to his miniature warhead, maybe we'll put it that way. But it looked like a fake. People aren't sure if that's the real deal or not. They don't think it's a nuclear warhead, a miniaturized one that could fit on the end of a missile. But North Korea has pledged warned is a better word, of a preemptive strike against the United States or South Korea because of the war games we're holding. Now, they claim that these war games are simulating an invasion of North Korea. And there may be some truth that these war games have some of those aspects to them, which is going to lead us into this story. Now, we've been talking about, for the last few months now, would the president try to disrupt the election in November should he see the polls and the public not going the way he thinks they should go? Remember, this is an Alinsky person. He wants to control you. So, it has just started to bleed across some different fairly reputable outlets that this may be what's coming up. All right, this is actually on InfoWars. Now, InfoWars is the Alex Jones website. He's also a radio host. This was on InfoWars, and it says, "Would Obama start a war to stay in office?" Now, I've been saying this for months. Some other people have been too, but this is starting to get some traction, and they point to these, why are we trying to provoke North Korea by doing this? Now, I understand we do it every year, but why are we trying to provoke them now? Why don't we just do these war games maybe a little further south or with a few less people? Because it has been done with less troops in the past. And then he also, in the article, it's by Michael Snyder. Why are we trying to provoke China also? Now, you have these islands in the South China Sea that they are militarizing. We know this. We know this is a problem, but we also know we can handle this in a professional fashion. Now, why are we trying to provoke them by getting our carriers and our destroyers within a few miles of the islands? Are we hoping that they fire upon us? Because China has already said that they are fully prepared for a war with the United States, should it come to that. They're not scared, essentially. Now, there are many reasons why us and China are having relations virtually dissolve over the last few months. But now they're saying that they're prepared if it comes to that. They don't want to, but if it comes to it, they think they can take us on. So why are we kind of poking the bear? You know, this is all the things that this article points to. You can find it on InfoWars, like I said, by Michael Snyder. Why are we doing this? Plus, you have this coalition of 49 countries that want to invade Syria and take out the Assad regime. Well, that's going to provoke Russia. So there are three real irons in the fire that at any time could spark and immediately start World War III. Immediately. Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? And he points to, you know, perhaps maybe it's because the president wants to interrupt the elections. And since 2001, there are various laws out there, well, since 9/11, that give the president, under the right circumstances, essentially the ability to be a dictator until the situation is resolved. Now, you don't use the word dictator because we just don't like that word here, but essentially a dictator. That's really what it's meant to do, in case of a quote-unquote national emergency. any one of these three things, whether North Korea decides to lob a nuke over at South Korea, or if Russia decides to tangle with 49 coalition countries in Syria, or if China decides to shoot even one or two bullets at one of our carriers that are just off the coast of their claimed islands, why would he want to do that other than to invoke these powers? Now, I know it's not the way any of us want to think, and we hope that President Obama just rides off into the sunset and enjoys whatever little legacy he has. I don't think he wants to be the president with the legacy of being a dictator. I don't think he wants that. But you never know. You never know what goes on inside someone's head. So let's just hope that's not the case, but it's worth noting this story is getting a lot more traction. All right, let's talk about these crybaby kids out there in the West. You have a group called the Student Assembly for Power and Liberation. They are out of Western Washington University, and they want this college to now open up a brand new college, okay? They want the College of Power and Liberation, a new college at the university, and they want a $50,000 opening ceremony to christen this college. Now, they want it to be staffed with a full-time staff, and they want a 15-member student panel at the university to monitor, document, and archive all racist and anti-black and transphobic and misogynist, whatever, people on campus. So they're going to, if you say something no one likes or something that they don't like, they'll document you and they'll put you on a list somewhere. Okay, so far it's sounding very North Korea-ish to me. They want a $50,000 opening celebration. They want to document people they don't like. Oh yeah, and they don't want to use words like person and history. So when they write out the word person, it's P-E-R-S-X-N, as to not have the sun for the male in there. Or history, it's H-X-S-T-O-R-Y, because it's not his story, it's his history, whatever. They take the S, the I out, so the word his isn't in there. They also want the ability to fire police officers who they feel are engaging in oppressive behavior. All right, so this is part of that social justice warriors movement. This all started, of course, in the University of Missouri there. And these places are just starting to catch on. They're a bunch of crybabies. And, well, let's move to another set of crybabies with sort of the same stuff in mind. This is at the University of Arizona. They've come up with a 19-page list of demands. They're demanding the university. And, well, they want separate funding. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's 19 pages. To be honest, it's a pretty boring read. Parts of it are funny, and I'll read those to you. But they want separate funding for black students, B-L-A-C-K, which is building leaders and creative knowledge. They want more money for that, financial assistance, scholarships. You know, I thought FAFSA was around and you could get scholarships through them, but I guess not anymore. They want a 40% increase in representation of black people on student pamphlets. They also want their own building. There's a Martin Luther King Jr. building on campus. They want nobody but black people to be allowed inside of it. Let's see, what else do they want? Oh, they want to have gender-inclusive restrooms for the LGBTQIA plus students. I'm not sure what that means, but I have my own acronym for them. I'm going to call them the GUALTLIF people. Grow up and learn that life isn't fair, people, because that's what they need to learn. They want gender-inclusive restrooms. They want free tampons given out. What else do they want? Oh, they want you. They want to make sure that that they call you by the name. The teachers call you by the name you want them to call you by. So instead of saying Mr. or Ms. So-and-so in class, if you give them a nickname, they have to call you by that nickname because that's what you prefer. They also have pronoun issues. They don't want to use the words him or her or his or hers. Everything is going to be on the up and up with the pronoun use, according to this group out of the University of Arizona. So this is happening all the time. These kids are crybabies. They need to grow up. They need to learn life isn't fair. One day they'll learn that, and unfortunately for them, it will be the hard way. I didn't get to the Loretta Lynch stuff. She doesn't want to be SCOTUS, so she doesn't want to be on the Supreme Court. So there we go. That's all she deserves from me. But for now, we're out of time. A huge thank you to those serving our country at home and abroad. Also, a huge thank you to those in the law enforcement community. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for all your hard work. We all depend on you. God bless all of you. God bless all of your families. And until Friday, I'm the Rhino, and I'm out.
been listening to The Rhino Report. Always right. Copyright 2016.